Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. Whether you're tuning in through Conversations Radio Network, we welcome you. Those joining us on the radio dial in Mississippi at WYAD 94.1 FM, we're glad to bring you into our conversation, as well as tuning in on the East Coast in Atlanta at 106 Live. We're glad you all could join us as well. Catherine Smith is joining us today to talk to us about her fascinating new book that already has people talking. It's called The Gatekeeper, Missy Lehan, FDR, and the Untold Story of the Partnership That Defined a Presidency. Of course, we all know about Franklin D. Roosevelt, but in this new book by Catherine, we're able to find out about someone that many of us are just discovering, that being Missy Lehan, his very faithful secretary, and how really she was so much more than that. We're going to talk to Catherine not only about how she discovered Missy's story, but also why it was so important for her to not only tell it, but to tell it in a way that really did it justice. If you're just now hearing about The Gatekeeper, we'll tell you a little bit later how you can get it for yourself. But Catherine, hello to you, and welcome to the program.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely
so you're
all mine.
You're in Mississippi, Atlanta. You're everywhere.
We are. We've been very fortunate, Catherine, and we're glad to be able to bring all of them into this conversation with you today. I mean, first of all, let's talk about this response to this book. I mean, the book is just out this year, and, I mean, people are buzzing about not only, I think, the writing, the way you were able to write this book, but also how you've been able to, for a lot of us, to help us to discover, you know, that not only the Roosevelt era a little bit differently, but the people who were around him that really influenced him. So what has it been like for you to see that?
It's just been a fabulous 3 years of discovery and just fun. I love reading about that time period. So I've always been a big fan of reading about FDR, and that really originates. I'm a Georgian by birth. I grew up in Macon in Atlanta, and my grandfather was a Yellow Dog Democrat, and we all Southerners know what that is, right?
Mm-hmm. Right,
someone who
right.
would vote for a yellow dog if it was on the Democratic ticket. But he had been a young father and husband when the Depression really hit its bottom and had really struggled with not being able to feed his family. So when the New Deal began, things really started turning around for him, and he just revered FDR. So I learned about FDR from my grandfather. But for years I would read about her, and this woman, Missy Lehan, was just always right there, right at his shoulder. And I thought, gosh, what a fabulous job. I would have loved to have been Missy Lehan. And I wanted to read her biography and discovered no one had ever written one, so I decided to do it myself.
Wow. And what a big job, I mean, that was to take up, for one thing. I think, but also, I love the fact that you even said in another interview, Catherine, how, you know, how dedicated you were to making sure you got it right. You got some really amazing access to her life, to her family. I mean, what was it like for you to have that kind of trust with them?
It was kind of funny how it started. I got in touch with her great nieces, Barbara Jakes and Jane Scarborough, through the archivist at Warm Springs. His name is Mike Shaddix, and a really, really helpful, knowledgeable guy. And when I first called Barbara up, told her what I was working on, told her my name, and it just turned out by coincidence that she and her cousin Jane were really anxious to have Missy's true story told, but they didn't know a writer to contact. So I told them my name, told them I was a writer, and they Googled me on the internet and came up with a Catherine Smith who writes bodice-ripping romance novels. It's kind of a miracle they gave me a second chance after that. But anyway, they have just been a joy to work with. We've gotten to be really good friends. And they always said, you know, we don't have an agenda here. It's let the chips fall where they may. So they gave me complete access to their papers, her pictures, letters, newspaper clippings, memorabilia. And then, of course, I had quite a number of other sources, too, but their archives were really crucial to telling this story.
Right.
It was fabulous.
What I was going to say was, Catherine, you know, what was so interesting to me was, in such a stark, you know, contrast to the world we live in today when it comes to those in politics, she was not trying to have the spotlight on her. She was not trying to make a name for herself. She really was for the betterment of FDR, something you don't always see when it comes to people working with elected officials. What was that like for you to be able to realize that she was someone, even with all this power, being the only female in that position, that she was not trying to do anything to bring attention to herself, but to really to do better for her boss?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was great, singular. And, you know, I think that was partly how she managed as a woman in that position, too, is that she was very self-effacing. And, in fact, she'd even tell people in interviews, oh, I never talked to the president about politics or anything personal, which was just a lie. But that was how she, you know, kind of got around the spotlight. She worked at the edges of the spotlight and just made it look like she was just a very nice secretary who kept her nose in her typewriter all the time, and it wasn't the case at all. So there was that sort of defensive mechanism, I think. And then I also don't think she had any ambitions for herself. I can't imagine Missy wanting to run for office or anything like that. She just adored the Roosevelts and was very happy furthering FDR's causes and helping Eleanor Roosevelt become the great first lady that she did. There is the epitaph on her tombstone is a quote from FDR. It was she was utterly selfless in her devotion to duty, and I think that's very appropriate.
Yeah, yeah. You do allow us, though, in this book, and I have to say, I have not done a lot of research on FDR before, so this book was a great snapshot. It definitely makes you want to know more. The relationship between Eleanor and, of course, his administration, Eleanor and individuals like Missy, is really interesting the way you were able to capture that. Have you had people surprised about that, or did a lot of people know that she could be as direct and forceful and sometimes blunt as she comes across
Eleanor
in this book? So that, yeah, right.
Yeah, and I think that was one of Missy's real values, is she was a buffer between the Roosevelts. Eleanor was a great, great woman with very, very strong opinions. And and she was ahead of her time in many ways, and just some of the things she wanted to get done were just not politically practical as high-minded and right as they were. They just couldn't get done. So sometimes she really caused a lot of problems in the administration and for Franklin, and there were a lot of resentment among his cabinet members and advisors. Some of them just really thought she was a lot of trouble. One of them was Harold Ickes, who was the Secretary of the Interior. He was not a fan. But you know, if she was important, she was a force of nature.
Exactly, for sure. And even when they seemed to differ, that you know, there was still Missy there to keep the peace. And even, you know, one thing you share later on in the book, you know, in her latter time, even what she wanted to do to make sure that what she had, you know, even though it wasn't as if they needed it, but making sure that what she had was shared with that family for sure. You've devoted quite a bit of your life to, you know, to researching, you know, of course, Franklin D. Roosevelt and what he has been able to do. What was it like for you to discover, as we're able to do, as I learned for the first time in Chapter 17 of the book, Catherine, that it was actually Missy who was the first person at the White House to find out that World War II had begun?
That was one of the most exciting things, I think. And it was something that had not been a secret. It was in Grace Tully. Grace Tully was Missy's assistant, and she became the presidential secretary after Missy had a stroke in 1941 and had to leave her job. But it was in Grace's memoir that she was the one who answered the phone for the president after he'd gone to bed. Nobody could wake him up. You know, that's that proverbial, shall we wake the president? That was the call that came in 2:50 a.m. on September 1st, 1939, and they sent it to Missy's bedside phone. And the message was that Poland had been invaded by the Germans. So Missy ran downstairs to FDR's bedroom, and they just sat there, the two of them, with getting this horrible news. The call came in from William C. Bullitt, who was not only the ambassador to France, but he was also Missy's boyfriend. And FDR's words were, well, Bill, it's come at last. God help us all, which was certainly appropriate. And then he and Missy sat up for hours, and he was contacting the military authorities. He was contacting his press secretary, saying, you've got to get down here right away. I just can't imagine what that must have been like. And he scratched on Roosevelt liked to write little notes about directives, things that needed to be done, and he just scratched out a little chit that they call them, and you know, wrote his circumstances that, you know, I was in bed at 3:10 a.m. and this is what I did, and he gave the chit to Missy, and she put it in her scrapbook. She had a collection of those.
Right, right. I think that is the thing, and I think that is why it is so important that her story is being told. And you know, I can only imagine how you feel, Catherine, and being able to be the one to tell it. I want to say for those who are just tuning in, either on the radio side or online, you're listening to Conversations Live. We're excited to welcome Catherine Smith to our program today. She's the author of the new book, The Gatekeeper, Missy Lehand, FDR, and the Untold Story of the Partnership That Defined a Presidency. You mentioned, of course, her personal life. Again, not something that a lot of people in public office today like to talk a great deal about. I can imagine in Missy's time, it was also one of those things that was not, you know, to be talked about quite a bit, especially, you know, for a woman at that time, you know, to be in an administration like this and to have a personal life. Mm-hmm. What was it like for you to kind of pull back the layer, though? Because so many times we do just get a outside look of an individual. What was it like for you to see how she balanced her personal and professional life?
Well, I was glad she had a personal life because most of the writers before have just taken what she had said. You know, she said in her 20s that someone asked her if she, you know, ever thought she would marry, and she said, just laughed and joked and said, oh, who could ever measure up to FDR? And people would put that in books like she never changed her mind after she was 25 years old, and people do change. And she fell in love with this man. He was very attractive. His name was William C. Bullitt. He was from a very wealthy Philadelphia family, very glamorous and charming. And he may have been using her for access. We don't really know, but they had a relationship that lasted from 1933 when she went to work in the White House until 1940 when he came home from Paris after the Nazis took it over and she broke off with him. So I found there were letters that she had written to him at the archives at Yale, and I was just glad to know that she had had someone in her life who she really cared about. He was apparently a lot of fun to be around. He, you know, gave her lovely gifts and took her out dancing and things like that, and you know, he made her happy. So I was glad she had that. But she, but the interesting thing to me was what really got to her and got her to break off with him was when he came home. You know, he was not going to be able to go back to France as ambassador. And he wanted another job. He wanted to be Secretary of State or Secretary of War or Secretary of the Navy. And I think he was really bugging her about, you know, get FDR to give me a cabinet job. And then also he just wanted so much of her time. And she finally said, look, I have to break off engagements all the time. And my friends understand that. And if you can't, just take a hike. And that was it. So her duty was always with Franklin Roosevelt and, to a lesser degree, Eleanor Roosevelt.
Right, right. In Chapter 9 of the book, there's that great quote by Moley that you cited. She had every virtue and every talent needed by the super confidential secretary of a man in high office. Again, something that is not always the case today. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you by nature, Catherine, find yourself doing a compare and contrast of individuals like her, individuals like FDR, and how they operated in their time versus today where
how
the world is always watching everything. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we know FDR got around, away with so much. You know, we just look at what's happened this week with Hillary Clinton. You know, she has a cough. She feels unwell at an event. And now all of a sudden it's just like, what's she hiding? What's she hiding? You know, does she have something terrible wrong with her? FDR was in a wheelchair, and most of the people in the country had no idea. One of my favorite stories from the book is when Missy invited the young Thomas P. Tip O'Neill, who was a neighbor of her family's in Massachusetts, to come visit her at the White House, and she took him up to meet FDR, and O'Neill just about dropped his teeth because he had no idea that FDR was in a wheelchair. It was just a gentleman's agreement with the press that they didn't take pictures of him in a wheelchair. And so whenever people saw him in photographs, he had, you know, big shoulders, he had a big head. He was in his car, or he was in a boat, or he was at his desk. And they knew that he had polio and that he walked with a cane, but they had no idea that he couldn't walk at all. So
Right. That's
a really interesting comparison today. But there are some other comparisons that show me that things have changed very little. One thing people don't know today is that FDR started the March of Dimes, and its original cause was polio. And it eventually funded all the research that found the polio vaccine, which is the reason that folks like you and I have never had to worry about that. But at the same time, when they were using Roosevelt's name to raise money for the March of Dimes, and all these accusations came flooding in, he's just lining his pockets with the money, and he's giving political favors to people who make big donations. It's just the same stuff that's said today about the Clinton Foundation. And, you know,
right.
You just think it just infuriated FDR because he was trying to find some way to end this scourge of this disease that was crippling adults and children. And anyway, it's the more things change, the more they stay the same.
The more they stay the same, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and we can't have this conversation, Catherine, without talking about power and the way that people not only see it but also use it. Would you say it's safe to say, and not just because you're writing a book about her, that that really Missy was someone who understood that with that power came great responsibility?
Yeah. She didn't want power for power's sake. I think she just wanted to be useful. I call her the Swiss Army knife of the White House, which she was. She believed in the New Deal. She believed in the aims of Franklin Roosevelt's administration, and she wanted to make it work. Now, there were certain ways that she, you know, took advantage of her perks. She got to go on wonderful cruises on the LaRocco, and she got to live in the White House. And I think she probably helped her brother find a job with a federal agency. If she wanted to have some, look at an array of diamond bracelets from Cartier, Mr. Cartier would send them down from New York for her to look at them in the White House. Probably not everybody could do that, but you know, that's pretty small potatoes compared to what some things have gone on. I mean, even the Roosevelt children were really guilty, the older children, of really taking advantage of their name and in a financial way, and I don't think she did anything like that.
So what was your hope when you finished, I mean, this labor of love that took you a couple of years, and then, of course, the hurry up and wait that is publishing, and now we have the book now. I mean, what was your hope when the book was released to the world, that the world would know about Missy that they didn't know?
I hope that it, you know, when I started working on the research for this book, I was kind of going along what had been written always before, that Missy was the love of FDR's life and she was the most special relationship in his life. And I came away feeling that that wasn't the story at all, that she was a very important woman in politics, a groundbreaker, a glass ceiling breaker. And I want people to think of that rather than thinking, oh, yeah, wasn't she the one who was in love with FDR, or wasn't she the one who might have been his mistress? If she was, if they were lovers, there's just no proof of it, and we just really don't know. And I don't think it's any of our business, to be honest. It's, it's their business.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
But I think it's very unlikely they were. So that was it. I wanted to tell Missy's story, and her great nieces felt the same way, that she was an important woman who's been marginalized by history, and I hope that enough people read The Gatekeeper that won't happen anymore.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think that's going to happen. I think people are definitely reading the book. And I think, you know, if people read it and they're able to then discuss it, I think that is an even bigger thing. You had mentioned earlier, and I want to just talk, I didn't even mention really about the pictures in the book, but one of the great pictures is that was captured on page 181, which is the caption says, Missy's Home movie captured FDR in his wheelchair poolside in Warm Springs. And again, that is something that would have been a paparazzi, you know, phenomena in our day. And to have access to those great things, I mean, what that says a lot about how they felt about you, Catherine, I think. Once it got past the romance author.
One of the most, yeah, right. one of the most exciting things to me was Missy's great niece Barbara Jakes had these 16 millimeter home movies that Missy had shot in the 30s, and they were still good. She got them transferred to digital media, and we're just, you know, all these wonderful scenes, you know, FDR driving a motorboat and Eleanor ice skating and relay races with the press they were doing, you know, adult ring around the rosy. And then here comes a scene at the Warm Springs pool, and there's FDR in a wheelchair. There are only a handful of pictures known of FDR in a wheelchair, and just to see him just sitting there smiling with a towel on his knees, it was... there was actually two of them that showed that scene. So that was really exciting and gave me a real insight into what it was like just to be around them. I want to mention that I'll be at the Carter Library in Atlanta on October 12th at 7 p.m. doing a talk. I'll be doing a illustrated lecture talking about the clues to Missy's life that I found in her charm bracelets. And telling the story of the gatekeeper through that, the references to the charm bracelets are scattered all through the book, and a lady's charm bracelets tell a lot about a lady's life.
Missy certainly did.
Speaking of tour, you are all over the place right now, Catherine. Discussing, I mean, literally, I mean, you are all over the place. I mean, especially, I mean, doing the East Coast, doing a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
There's a great website that's set up though for our audience, and definitely stay connected with you. And we invite them to do that, which is www.catherinesmithwords.com. You also have one set up for the book as well, Catherine. Why don't you give that one out too?
Well, it's actually the same website with two titles. It's MargueriteLahan.com. And another thing I have is a very active Facebook page, the Missy Lahan Facebook page, and every day I post new pictures and Missy's Day in History, and that has all my events scheduled too. So really invite your listeners to engage with the Facebook page, and you'll find out an awful lot about Missy, things that aren't even in the book that I didn't have room to include.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking out this time. We'll make sure that we tag your Facebook page with the link
to
the podcast of this conversation as well, Catherine. And it goes without saying, you are welcome back here anytime. Looking forward to staying connected with you.
Thank you. I enjoyed the conversation, and thank you so much for your interest in Missy.
Hey, the pleasure's definitely all mine. We thank you for the time. And we thank your audience for tuning in to another great segment of Conversations Live. If you all came in late, you missed part of the conversation with Catherine, don't worry. Thanks to our online friends, you all can catch the replay right after we go off the air. The link is already available through our social media site. So head over to Facebook.com/CyrusWeb or go over to Twitter.com/CyrusWeb. You can click on the link there, listen to the show completely for free, and share it with your friends from there. Until next time, I'm your host, Cyrus Webb, saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music as well as a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.